Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach and consultant, and this is episode 83, Thought Leadership and Skills First Hiring with Dr. Mark Smith, Revolutionizing Talent Acquisition, How Skills-Based Hiring is Transforming Recruitment Practices and Challenging Traditional Hiring Models. What this episode will do for you is learn from Mark's journey in thought leadership and how he's become a leader in modern HR practices using skills-first hiring to transform traditional recruitment strategies. Learn key concepts from his book, A Better Choice, The Manager's Guide to Skills-First Hiring, and understanding how it reshapes talent acquisition for a new era. Discover how artificial intelligence tools, including computerized assessments, are revolutionizing the hiring process by evaluating skills and knowledge more efficiently than traditional methods. Learn about the challenges in implementing the skills-first hiring, the hurdles companies faced when experience-based hiring to skills-first model, when moving from such, and how AI can support this transition. Understand the balance between artificial intelligence-driven assessments and human intuition in the hiring process, ensuring that candidates are evaluated holistically, and this applies to AI workflow designs in any context. But before we dive more deeply into this episode, in case you're new here, consider that I created the Thought Leadership Studio podcast to help listeners improve their thought leadership skills. So whether or not you consider yourself a thought leader at this point, consider that I've come to the conclusion that the practice of strategic thought leadership is now fundamental to effective marketing and helpful in any area of positive influence. It's about leading an audience to embrace a unique perspective that gives them more value. So this podcast is designed to provide an accelerated training process. And an important part of this is having models of excellence, for which I provide interviews of people who excel in one or more areas relevant to strategic thought leadership. And if you're listening on an app, make sure you visit the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the episode description for a summary of the episode with a curated transcript, a story and images, and additional resources and offers. In this episode, I'm excited to introduce Dr. Mark Smith, a pioneer in modern hiring practices. So how does hiring relate to strategic thought leadership, the theme of this podcast? Well, strategic thought leadership is about shaping ideas that inspire and lead. And in HR, Dr. Smith has demonstrated this can mean helping the field evolve beyond traditional hiring models to prioritize what truly matters: skills, knowledge, and the ability to learn. As principal consultant at A Better Choice, he advocates for skills-first hiring, challenging the outdated focus on education and experience. His book, A Better Choice, The Manager's Guide to Skills-First Hiring, has become a key resource for leaders seeking more effective hiring methods. Mark has presented his expertise to Congress, gaining bipartisan support for his approach. And in this episode, we discuss his unique model of blending computerized assessments using artificial intelligence with role-play evaluations and how it's revolutionizing hiring. Mark also shares practical advice for leaders looking to implement these methods and gain strategic advantage thereby. So without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thank you.
Thought Leadership Studio.
So I'm your host, Chris McNeil with Thought Leadership Studio, and I'm sitting here with Mark Smith, PhD, Principal Consultant at A Better Choice Hire, and author of the best-selling book, A Better Choice, The Manager's Guide to Skills-First Hiring. Mark's expertise in HR and talent management has earned him recognition as one of the top 50 HR professionals and leaders of 2024. With a PhD in industrial organizational psychology, he's made significant contributions to hiring practices and HR research, including presenting expert testimony on skills-based hiring to the U.S. House Committee on Education and the Workforce. Impressive. Mark's unique blend of scientific rigor and creative problem-solving drives his mission to help companies hire the right people. What a big issue that is. That came up actually in the last interview, how that's one of the top issues with executives these days. Welcome, Mark. It's great to have you back.
Great. Yeah, great to see you, Chris. I was on this a few years ago, and you know, lots of things have changed since then, and I'm excited to talk about some of them.
Yeah, you've written your book. You're doing independent consulting at the time. You're director of thought leadership and HR at Sherm at that time.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And it's funny. You know, I was talking to some folks sort of in the larger thought leadership industry. About sort of, well, what does a career in this field look like? And, you know, some of them were just like, oh yeah, as a writer, I've been in thought leadership for years, or as a researcher. But, you know, some of us were, you know, we were sort of supporting others in thought leadership, but, you know, had some background as well, where we're going, well, am I supporting somebody else in thought leadership, or is that something I should be thinking of myself as? I am a thought leader as well. And so I'm like, I can only support for so long. At some point, you sort of got to write your own book, and you got to kind of do your own thing.
That's right. You've built a very powerful model we were talking about before we started recording that optimizes the hiring process. And that's a game changer from what I'm understanding, and it's taken a big load off of the plate. And we talked a little bit about how AI has created this deluge in some ways of information to be managed, but it takes the human touch at other stages.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's amazing how in the past 2 years, how much AI has advanced in terms of companies planning to use it and starting to use it and trying to use it. You know, a year ago, there was still a lot of talk. We need to do this. And you know, we promised that we'll do it. And now companies are starting to do it. But what I'm seeing a lot is they're not necessarily doing it all right. And as you say, losing the human touch.
Yep, that can happen. Well, to give our readers or listeners a little context of where you're coming from now, as opposed to a couple of years ago, especially. Was there a pivotal moment as something that happened or a shift in your thinking that led you to go off on this independent path, write your book, do this type of work that you're doing now?
So my whole career had really been about hiring and helping companies hire better. And that's really why I went into organizational psychology to begin with. And so, you know, when I started in the late 90s and embarked in grad school, it was for the purpose of helping companies assess applicants, hire better. I came from a football background, and okay, the NFL draft was fascinating to me in terms of how do I determine the best player to pick? And some of the times it was the best player, and at other times it was the best player for our team, because maybe I need something different than, you know, the team, you know, two towns over.
Ah, so part of it is assessing the team and taking a, how is this going to make the team better, as opposed to just looking at someone through the lens of who's the best individual.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And it's funny when you think about different sports, something like soccer or football, there's a lot of teaming going on. Basketball, there's a ton of interaction between the players on the field. And then you also have something like baseball, which to a large degree is a series of individual matchups and individual competitions, especially on the offensive side. Baseball is much more collect the best individual talent, and you pretty much have it. Some of these other sports, you need the individual talent, but the way that they interact is as important as the individual talent.
Absolutely. So you've written a book, and I know that's something that's interesting to a lot of our listeners who are either authors themselves or aiming to be authors, since this is all about strategic thought leadership. What prompted the book? And tell our listeners a little bit about the process, how you managed to get that first book done and published, and now it's being your calling card in your consulting work.
Yeah, so the skills-based or skills-first hiring is the topic of the book. Mm-hmm. And I had this approach for years before it had, you know, a name associated with it. Early in my career, when I was first doing consulting, worked with a lot of heavy industrial, oil and gas. I was down in Houston, and that was just sort of naturally what a lot of our clients were. And a lot of the big companies, they were doing a lot of hiring in places like refineries and plants and stuff. There were a lot of good jobs, and these companies had a lot of interest from applicants, and this was different for them than most other companies, most other types of jobs. They didn't care at all about if you had a college degree, but it would run you through some of the assessments that we put together, and we knew that these were good assessments, and we did a great validation. It was all, you know, very well put together, very well thought out. But again, it was ignoring education, because education wasn't relevant. It was the skills. It was the abilities. Those were the things that were relevant. Education is only, I think, useful if it provides the skills, the knowledge, the other types of things that you need to do the job. If we're just using education as just some sort of broad screener to say, oh, somebody's smart if they have a bachelor's degree, I'm going to say, well, wait a second. I don't know that that's the case. And I can tell you if they're smart enough by just giving them an assessment that really won't take much time.
Uh-huh.
And awesome. So that was, you know, earlier in my career. And I would always say, I wish other companies, you know, maybe more of the white collar side, would take that approach, where skills are important. Knowledge is important. Learning is important. But where that stuff comes from, if it comes from college, great. If it comes from somewhere else, great. We live in the information age. And, you know, there's as much information on YouTube as there is, you know, down the road at the local university. There just is.
Yeah, it's crazy. As a musician, I see young guitarists now getting high level skills by watching YouTube videos, as they would have had to go to Berklee School of Music or something like that,
hire
a virtuoso instructor back in the day to get
this
kind of skills. But that's it. What you gave is a great example of challenging a prevailing stale mental model,
right?
With a fresh perspective. That's thought leadership, you know. So,
and it's funny, because, you know, that was our approach for years, and you know, that was my sort of mental model coming at this. And just in the last few years, this skills-based, skills-first approach to hiring has really taken on more broadly. And then last summer, I was, because of my background in assessments and my perspective on this, I was invited to testify to Congress about this type of thing. And this topic, as I say, is really caught on. It's caught on the political left, and it's caught on the political right. It was a big hearing, and maybe 30 different representatives asked questions of me or somebody else on the panel of the day. And you basically couldn't tell if it was a Republican asking a question or if it was a Democrat asking the question. And I was talking to the staffer who who coordinated the whole event afterwards about it. And he said, Mark, this never happens. These things are always politically contentious, where the left has a completely different perspective than the right. Here, everybody is in support of this. And of course, I had said, well, that probably means we should be able to get something done, right? And of course,
right.
if we should be able to get something done, it's a topic like this. But of course, you know, there are other issues at play where even when everybody agrees, you know, our politicians have a hard time doing things.
Well, it does speak to the universality of the appeal of the position. So to delineate for the listener a little bit, the thought leadership path, so to speak, if skills first hiring is your thought leadership position, what's the old thinking that somebody would have had without that leadership to that new thinking? And how would you lead them from their old thinking to this position of embracing your model of the skills first hiring?
Right, right. And as I say, on the blue collar side, a lot of this was already in place, but it's the white collar side, the office jobs. Traditionally, even the term qualified, what does it take to be qualified for a job? What people think about is education, and they think about years of experience. So, in order to be qualified for this job, you need a bachelor's degree, and you need at least 5 years of experience doing, you know, whatever the topic of the job is. And that was just kind of broadly accepted as, well, of course, that's the case. And whenever you hear people talking, just using the term qualified for the job, it was usually education and years of experience. Mm-hmm. But what does it take to be effective in any job? It's not education, it's knowledge, it's skills. And for so many jobs today, it's continued learning, because, you know, maybe what you learned 10 years ago in college was great then, but one, you may not remember virtually any of it at this point. And two, you know, things have changed, especially if you're dealing with like a technical kind of job. It's like everything you learned in college, the specifics are different now, even if sort of broadly things aren't. And so it's pushing past that traditionally accepted education and experience and moving to something that is more based on knowledge and skills.
And part of that is the type of assessments that we were talking about. Can you walk our listener through how that works?
Yeah. So when we think about a hiring process, and I've outlined all this in the book, when you think of the hiring process, often the metaphor that we'll use, the graphic that we'll use, will be a funnel. And so
sure.
you've got a job, you've got a job opening. Okay, you need to post it somewhere. So you put together a job posting, list of qualifications, the duties of the job. And then you post that. And these days, virtually everybody's posting on Indeed. There are so many jobs on LinkedIn. You know, there's still a number of other different platforms out there. And so they'll post the job, and almost immediately they'll start getting a bunch of responses. And so then the question is, okay, I'm getting responses to this. How do I go from a bunch of responses? And when I say a bunch, so many jobs and companies that I'm talking to these days, they'll post the job and 2 days later they have 300 responses. 300 applicants, 300 resumes of not just random people. Some of them are just kind of random, but most of them have some reason to believe that they would be a good fit for the job. And so how to manage that number and then get down to, you know, something where I can pay attention to each of those individuals. And so that's the first question is, okay, after I post it, if I get a bunch of responses, and a lot of people do, how do I get from that number, which I can't deal with hundreds of people, I just can't deal with individually hundreds of people, to a number of people that I can deal with. And that's I think these days, computerized assessments, hard skills, soft skills, you know, personality, knowledge, those things, if you can do a good, valid computer assessment can go right at the top of the funnel.
But then when you get to the bottom of the funnel, that's where that human touch.
That's right. And of course, at the top of the funnel, when you, and I talk about this in most of the cases with larger companies, especially, it's a touchless process where somebody applies, they indicate their interest, they submit their resume. Somebody doesn't even have to review that on the business side. They can push them immediately to their assessments, and the recruiter doesn't actually have to do anything. Now, in this whole process, you need to make sure that the communication is there. So emails and stuff about how much time somebody has to take this set of assessments, what the next step in the hiring process are. After you submit the assessments, you know, they're okay, are you moving to the next step of the hiring process or are you not? And this is somewhere where companies have completely dropped the ball in a lot of cases. But you have these computer assessments, and that assuming somebody passes them, there are next steps of the hiring process. And those next steps of the hiring process are going to be interacting with the recruiter, providing more information about the job and the organization. And here it really has to be a realistic job preview, including the bad things about the job. And I say including, especially the bad things about the job. Sure. Because at this point, you know, if it's a job that is outside and, you know, the temperatures are unpleasant, you need to make sure that the person understands that. And for some people, they're just like, that's great. I love being outside. And other people are just like, well, that sounds terrible for me. And if it sounds terrible for somebody, I want them exiting the process as soon as possible. And so, and then after that, okay, there's an honest exchange of this is what the job is like. Okay, I'm perfectly fine with that. Then there are going to be some interviews. But you need to get from that a bunch of people to a reasonable number of people to a small number of people who you're actually considering. But if you're only hiring one person, it's how do you get to that one person that you're going to hire from the eight people that you're interviewing, or, you know, whatever that number is. And that's where I've done some more work recently of helping companies, you know, at that top end with the computer assessments, but also at that bottom end when they need to go from three finalists to one hire, how to do that, how to get that information, because that's a different level of information than information earlier in the hiring processes. And so I've developed some role play assessments that me and some colleagues do for companies where they can say, okay, we've got these final two people. I think they're both great, but I can only hire one. I need more information. And this is where the more information can come from. And so they can pass them on to us. We can run them through a role play. So if it's a manager job, we have a manager role play. If it's a sales job, we've got a sales role play. And then we can interactively deal with them in kind of this contrived fake situation. But you end up getting a lot of good information about these people, which is a different type of information than interviews or, you know, computer assessments. It's a different type of information that I think is really useful at that bottom end.
This is good. And this is to contextualize for listener a little bit, but we're talking about HR type stuff, of course. But I think this speaks to kind of a universal need for people that listen to this kind of podcast for thinking of things like AI workflow design. Where does it fit in? Where does it doesn't? That's universal for anybody doing leadership on the internet of any sort. At this point, you have to create content. And where does AI support the content? You don't want it to come off as AI written. You don't want it to be somewhere outside of your own consciousness. So then when you're interviewed, you have no idea what you wrote, you know? So it has to come from you, but AI can, you know, sort through mountains of information, like long transcripts, for instance, and parse out the important parts and help organize them. And we talked a little bit about that, about in the process of writing your book as well, how you take all this information when you write your first book, then how do you get it into a book?
So, yeah, right. There are a lot of resources out there. And you know, once you start going down that AI writing rabbit hole, There are resources where people will basically say, I have an AI system that will write your whole book for you. And you're just like, whoa, wait a second. That sounds like a terrible idea. But there are, you know, AI, editing and suggestions for, alternative ways of saying things, which is just an evolution of, you know, the squiggly lines underneath words in Microsoft Word from 15 years ago. You know, they could catch, first they were just catching spelling mistakes where this collection of letters was not found in a dictionary, and so it would give you a squiggly line. And then it started catching grammar errors. And, you know, that's an evolution, right? That where it is different than it was on the very beginning of spell check. Okay. And then it was, okay, this is a word, but this is not the right version of that word. You know, you have a different version of there, and Word will catch it now. Not 100% of the time, but 90% of the time. And so there are, you know, whether you can use Grammarly or something, they can have suggestions for wording. So in the book writing process, there are more resources out there to give you this kind of live feedback. And I found it very helpful. Of course, you can't outsource the writing completely, but there are useful resources available to everybody right now.
So what has your book done for you in terms of getting consulting gigs?
Well, it helps getting these initial conversations. This is a topic that a lot of people care about. The skills-based hiring is a topic that rings true to people, and especially HR professionals. Virtually everybody is on board with this general notion of focusing on knowledge, focusing on skills, and focusing less on where those skills came from. And everybody's on board with that. Some of the times, once you move the next step from talking to HR, is you're talking to hiring managers, and then the hiring managers, if they're not really familiar with this broad topic, they sort of say, "Oh, hold on here, this is different than we did it before. How am I going to know that these are smart people and these are going to be good hires?" And a lot of times they use what I was talking about before. How do I know if they're really qualified? And then that these are good questions. And then you can start talking about assessments and what does it mean to have a valid assessment. So the book has really helped open the doors to have those initial conversations. And then, things are different for each company and or each organization. And so you need to have unique conversations, but the book is able to open doors.
I can see the relevance of such assessment processes, even to the solopreneur who's making a name for him or herself online and needs to outsource some things, bring in a VA to do some things. How do I check my own fit for what I should be doing and what I should have other people doing, or that I should bring other resources into doing? So I think it's got pretty universal applicability, at least in this context. Can you give us some examples of how to know somebody's a fit or has the skill set to do task A or versus not, and someone else should do it?
Well, yeah. So, you know, this gets to the notion of validity and validity of whatever type of test, interview, assessment that you're running people through. So validity is going to mean relevance. And so how do I know that this test, which may sort of look good on its face, how do I know that this is truly relevant for the job, for the duties, for this particular thing that I need? And first of all, determining relevance is somewhat different depending on, is this a personality or motivator assessment? Is this a knowledge assessment? Is this an ability assessment? So if we're talking about a skills assessment, a lot of times what we'll do is what we'll call a job content validity, which is making sure that the content of the job, so the duties that I know are performed on the job, are represented on the assessment or on the test or it's in the interview, and not sort of nominally represented, but yeah, this is right. You know, so I remember in my past, I said I'd done a lot of blue collar stuff. And so a company was hiring some plumbers, and they said, okay, we have this plumbing test, and it seems straightforward, right? I'm hiring plumbers. I have this plumbing test. And they said, you know, why don't you look over it, because legal was involved and they wanted to push things for me. And so I looked at it, and of course, I don't know anything about plumbing. And so then I said, well, this kind of looks relevant, but I don't have any idea. Okay, let's do a little job analysis. And so what are you doing on the job? What are these plumbers responsible for doing? And what tools do they need to know? What systems do they need to know? And as it turns out, once you got to that level of detail, this plumbing test was completely outdated. And virtually everything on the plumbing test, and again, the big letters were plumbing test, were irrelevant for how the job was done. And so somebody who doesn't know anything would say, oh, I'm hiring plumbers, let's give them a knowledge of plumbing test, you know, which is assessing some knowledge, some skills. But as it turned out, once you did the analysis of the job, that plumbing test was basically irrelevant. And if they wanted a test, they needed to start from scratch, or they needed to find something that was indeed updated. And so that's a content validation approach that works for some things. But if you think about like a personality assessment, that's not going to work for a personality assessment.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So how would you do such an analysis of a job to find out if a certain test is valid? How do you actually have to observe people doing the job and take notes, or through interviews or query
managers,
or how do you gather that information?
Yeah, so that's what we'll call a job analysis. And us, and with a background in organizational psychology, a lot of times we'll say virtually everything we do starts with a job analysis. And I remember the first job analysis I did, I literally started with a blank piece of paper and went around and just started collecting. I was asking people, I was working with this executive search firm, and they had a bunch of associates and things, and I wanted to figure out what they did. And so I started collecting their tasks and sort of at a higher level duties. And that's where I started, was the tasks and duties. What are you doing? What are you spending your time doing? And then collected those. And that's really where any job analysis needs to start, is what does the person on the job doing? So the duties, what are they responsible for? And then a more specific level, the tasks and you know, maybe even the job elements under the task, depending on what you care about. But it's that. Fast forward to today, there are resources out there for the vast majority of jobs, so you don't have to start with a blank piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the U.S. government has what we call the ONET, the Occupational Network. And so you just go to the ONET, you type in the job that you care about, and there are thousands of jobs in there, and they will provide you a list of activities and stuff which are probably done on the job. You still need to make sure that it's all correct, but no longer do you have to start with a blank piece of paper. You can start with something that's fairly complete, and you can, you know, add things and remove things accordingly, but the process is a lot easier than it used to be.
So if you were speaking to a group of CEOs or entrepreneurs who all had employees, small three-person company up to 500, 10,000 people companies, and you're having them start to question their beliefs about how they did hiring, and you just had 5 minutes to give them this analysis that, hey, you need to question how you think about this and maybe do it a different way, how would that roll?
No, that's a good question. I think it's really starting with the concept of knowledge and skills, and what do you need on the job? Because college doesn't provide so much of that. And so quickly, and within the first 30 seconds, you start having that discussion, you quickly go from, okay, college is necessary, to maybe college isn't necessary, because what do you learn at school? Well, you learn a lot of broad things, but you don't learn the vast majority of things that are need for job A or for job B. So that's it. You start talking at a broad level. What does somebody need on this job? Did they learn that in college? And again, 30 seconds, that process falls apart, or that argument falls apart. And so then you can start to not build the negative argument, but to build the positive argument. Okay, how can we make sure that somebody does have the knowledge, that does have the skills? And there you can talk a little bit, we talk a little bit about the content validation approach. But then we'll also talk about a different type of validation approach. And that's I call it a statistical validation, where we can rely on evidence, and it's correlational evidence, but it's empirical evidence, where does somebody who scores better on the test, and a lot of times this is an ability test or a personality assessment, does somebody who scores better on the test, do they perform better on the job? Mm-hmm. And that's a fairly high bar, because people are complicated. Even measuring performance is complicated. Mm-hmm. Now, scoring a test isn't complicated, but measuring performance is complicated. And again, this is something that had worked on for years, is how to measure performance, and then how to get truly test whether your assessment is correlated, relates to job performance. And there are a lot of tests out there that are popular, that are used by organizations, that don't predict performance. And that's unfortunate. There's a lot of invalidity in the testing industry. And so companies really need to make sure that whether they do the validity study or there's another validity study that they can rely on, so that they know that the assessment that they're using truly predicts performance. And that is really important. You need to make sure your tests are valid.
And can you know if you have enough people in that role, then you can sort out the best performers from the worst? Could you know by providing the test to your current people and looking for a certain pattern in the best performers, you can validate with the people coming in? Would that be a valid approach?
Yeah. So we've looked at all sorts of ways of doing that. And what we find is, I want the broadest cross section of your employees to take the assessment, not just the good performers, but also the bad performers and the middle performers. So we can see, are there things that differentiates those different groups of people? And as I say, a lot of times with a lot of assessments that are used, the test doesn't show the difference between the high performers and the not. If you just look at the group of high performers, it may sort of look unique, but if you don't have the group of low performers, maybe the group of low performers performs exactly the same on the test. And so you need those, all of those. And again, now we're a little bit in the weeds here, but I've done these types of things. I love these validity studies. I can talk about these validity studies for hours. I've done so many of them in my career. I've seen engineers try to do this type of thing themselves, and they'll do it. And then they'll, you know, there are statistics out there that engineers use that, you know, social psychologists don't, but we could. And some of the times I've seen them find a relationship, and they go, "Mark, there's no relationship here." And I go, "Well, no, there's a relationship. It's just a relatively small relationship." And they say, "Well, that's not a big enough relationship to care about." And the reality is, people are so complicated that it's hard to find any significant relationship. And if I'm finding statistical significance in a sample of, let's say, 100 people, that is good, useful, legitimate information. That if it's statistically significant, I'll say the test has validity. It can be effectively used to screen people. So whether the company does the validity study themselves or relies on other similar companies who have done it, other similar jobs is probably the best way to think about it. You need to make sure that your tests are valid. And again, that's besides the interactive assessments that I do now, these are things that we help companies with, making sure that the tests that they want to use are valid. And there are practical reasons for this, but there are also legal reasons for it.
Huh, that makes sense. Well, this has been fascinating. And the way we usually wind these interviews up is, and I don't know if I was doing this in 2022 when we first talked, is ask the guest two kinds of questions. One, knowing who our listener is, the thought leader, the entrepreneur, the innovator, a communicator, the marketer, trying to persuade people online to embrace a certain point of view. What are the top three things you would recommend they do right away to get better at that from your perspective? First question. Second question is, somebody's listening to this thinking, I need to connect with Mark. This is something my company needs to do. How would they reach you or find your book or both?
Right, right. Okay, great. Yeah, so I think in the whole hiring process, it's just to make sure that you're thinking about how things need to be done and not how things used to be done. And so you're thinking about the knowledge and the skills that somebody needs to do the job effectively, and then how to measure those. And a lot of times that at a broad level is fairly straightforward, but specifically it gets complicated. And well, I think I understand this broadly, but how do I actually put this into practice? And that's then where a lot of companies need the help is not thinking this through at a broad level. People can kind of think things through pretty well, but it's, okay, I think I know what I need. How do I make this happen? And that's where, you know, the folks need consulting help and just a little bit of expertise. If they just want a little bit, then, you know, they can just go buy the book. And again, the book is A Better Choice, The Manager's Guide to Skills First Hiring, available on Amazon and other places. And that will cover, you know, a little bit of what we talked about, plus a lot of other, you know, hopefully interesting things. But if they want more assistance, just have some more questions, want to talk through their situation and, you know, whether one thing will work for them, please reach out. So it's abetterchoicehire.com. That's my website. And there, there's a lot of information about the expert role play assessments that we do, which really helps determine of your final candidates, you know, who is the best person for the job. Some of the times in a similar situation, it's going to be, okay, I've got five people on my sales team. I need to promote somebody to a sales manager position. How do I do that? Who should I promote? And companies, I think, especially like to outsource those types of decisions because they want to keep good relationships with the four people that they don't promote as much as the one person that they do promote. And so they can outsource the assessment process to somebody. And then, you know, cynically, it's they have somebody to blame to the four people who don't get promoted. It's, I wanted to promote y'all, but Dr. Smith over here said we could only promote one person and this is who he suggested. And I'm fine playing the heavy. I don't have a problem with that. There's that. So the role play assessments as well as the other types of help that we'll offer for the other types of assessment. I work with one company, Zobin, who's a testing company that has a bunch of computer assessment, but there's a lot of other companies that do those types of things too.
That's awesome. And to the listener, I'm going to link to all of these resources of Mark's on the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. So if you're listening on an app, the link is in the episode description. It's been a pleasure, Mark.
Yeah, this has been great. It was good to reconnect with you after a few years, and I hope in a couple of years we can do it again.
Fantastic. Great conversation.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this has been Episode 83, Thought Leadership and Skills First Hiring with Dr. Mark Smith, where we discuss topics like revolutionizing hiring with the Skills First approach, how it challenges stale models and shifts the paradigm away from experience-based hiring. And the human touch in hiring, balancing artificial intelligence with realistic job previews, and how this can be extrapolated to inform human AI workflow designs in all contexts. Thanks again for listening. And if you're listening on app, make sure you go to the episode page at thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It is linked to in the episode description, where I link to Dr. Smith's book, his website, and other resources. And also there's some free resources like The Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, a free download to help you with the building blocks of your own thought leadership, and a link to get a free preview of my upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership. Again, thanks for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm Chris McNeil, and look forward to seeing you on the
Thought Leadership Studio.